The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
Greetings and salutations, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his sweetie darling, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 71. That'll become more apparent when we see our
I hope it does.
Episode 71 of The Big Picture in front of you right now for the week beginning August 7. And coming up on today's show, old school for the new school, what TV shows of yesteryear should our kids really be watching?
We're going to discuss the provocative new Australian comedy about the Cronulla riots, no less, Mark.
And darling, as I said, join us for the glitz and glam of the absolutely fabulous movie, Air Kisses to All.
Air kisses, mwah, mwah. Before we get to all of that, Mark, let's talk about some other things that are happening this week. At cinemas opening this Thursday, Suicide Squad, which sounds like one of the most unmarketable titles you can imagine. But this film's been creating a lot of noise for about the past year or more, particularly among comic book fans. This is based on a DC Comics original, which is the place that brought us Batman and Superman and that kind of thing. But increasingly heading towards the release of Suicide Squad, people who don't even read comics are starting to get excited about Suicide Squad, which to me looks a little bit like the Avengers on crazy pills. So we're going to be talking about it on the show next week. Stick around for that. I think one of the most interesting things about it, given the title, I've heard that it's not nearly as confronting as what it might suggest being called Suicide Squad.
Okay. Well, here's something that's going to be fairly confronting for people. A Catalyst this Tuesday at 8 p.m. has a show on artificial sweetness. Now, it depends on who you are as to what your reaction is going to be to artificial sweetness. This may not sound like an exciting topic. For some people, they just go, yes, this is the solution. This is the way that I'm actually going to lose all of my extra weight. They're going to help me and they're going to prevent diseases and things like that. And yet, on the other side of the same debate, we've got critics that say they cause a variety of health problems and they're likely to actually, you know, be linked to cancer and all sorts of things. GP and guest reporter Dr. Zeeshan Arane unpacks the science of artificial sweeteners and how they may impact or benefit our health. So tune in, be aware.
Mate, also coming up at cinemas this week, a film called Bad Mums, which is trying to do what it says in the title. Mila Kunis, Catherine Hahn, and Kristen Bell, who was the voice of Frozen's Elsa, I think. She's up on screen. This is not an animated film. This is an MA 15 plus comedy about what it says in the title, Bad Mums, where a bunch of mums are tired of the pressure to be a perfect mum. So what do they do? What's the solution? Be a bad mum. Be a bad mum. So we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, in the next few weeks on the show. I'm not sure entirely where this film's going to go, but
I'm already feeling we should let it go.
It's called Bad Mums.
Yeah. Okay, well, here's something that actually is going to be sort of a more of an education than some sort of like candy floss for the mind. The Eichmann Show. Now, it screens on Wednesday, 10th August, and I'm telling you this clearly because I feel you should think about this, about watching this one. It's on SBS. It's set in Jerusalem, 961. Many people might know of the trial, the Nazi trial, the most notorious key architect Nazi, Adolf Eichmann, that took place. Well, this was actually televised. It was described as the trial of the century and it was shown on 37 countries on TV, and it was the first time that the horrors of the Holocaust had been heard about directly from survivors. Well, it's been turned into a movie, and that is basically starring Martin Freeman as Milton Friedman, the guy who is actually bringing the show to existence. Anthony LaPaglia stars as Leo Hewitz, the director, and together they tell the story of this extraordinary television event, and it includes all sorts of historical footage and things along the way. So it's looking like great watching time. 10th of August on SBS, The Eichmann Show.
Mark, before we get to what your kids are watching for this week, some entertainment news. You might have been keeping tabs on Comic-Con that was on recently.
Absolutely.
In the States. Comic-Con, for anyone who doesn't know, is basically a massive nerd fest every year that originally started out, as it says in the title, around comic books primarily, but it's become really like this launching pad for particularly movies to do with comic books now. They seem to dominate the landscape at Comic-Con, which once was really the domain just of readers and nerds who were like hiding in their house. And now they come out into the light and there's all these things that explode across Comic-Con, again, primarily to do with movies about superheroes. So if you go online, you will track down new trailers for, on the Marvel side of things, Marvel Comics, you'll find trailers for Black Panther, the next Thor film, Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and Captain Marvel. What's Captain Marvel? Is that that's a thing?
That's another thing.
Wow.
And okay. I'd just like to point out that we do not like the term nerd.
Oh, you don't?
We prefer, my people prefer the term fans of alternate reality.
Well, fans of alternate reality also can go online and find out DC Comics released a whole bunch of trailers, including for Wonder Woman and the Justice League, which has been a long time coming, but that's coming to screen soon. So for any new updates on those movies, head online because they did emerge at Comic-Con and you can check out trailers now.
Well, if we didn't already have enough Trekkie wonder, and let's face it, who does have enough Trekkie wonder with Star Trek Beyond on our screens, Paramount Pictures are striking whilst the iron is hot with the news of the fourth Star Trek film in production.
Yeah?
That's right. This film sees Chris Pine's Captain Kirk cross paths with a man he never had a chance to meet, but whose legacy has haunted him since the day he was born, his father.
It turns out that those producers haven't checked out your review at thebigpicturewebsite.com because you weren't entirely impressed with Star Trek Beyond, and if they knew that, they wouldn't have greenlit that fourth film.
Well, no, I believe that they're doing the right thing by because they're going to put the Chris's together, okay? You're going to have Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth all together because Chris Hemsworth played George Kirk.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's going to stand. Will the Chris's be able to pull it off, or will it be one Chris too many? Fingers crossed.
Let's get on to true or false, Mark, quickly, please.
Okay. Well, look, you know that little-known actor Will Smith?
Oh, that guy. Yeah, I've heard of him. He was in a movie, I think, once, or maybe a TV show too.
He's also coming up in Suicide Squad, so I thought I might take a moment to actually talk about his approach to Men in Black. Now, Will Smith is always legendary for being particularly careful of his image, okay? Mm-hmm. And so when Men in Black came out and there was going to be a doll made of Will Smith, Will Smith took the whole matter personally in hand, travelled to Hong Kong to actually have himself, you know, particularly modelled as Agent J, and required in his model additional snap-on body parts you wouldn't expect on a non-alien hero.
Mm-hmm.
True or false?
I really want to say true, but you'll give us the answer after we discuss what your kids are watching, Mark.
Indeed, I will.
In the world of television, you don't have to wait long before everything old is new again, and that's certainly the case when it comes to streaming television. The broadband revolution for the box has thrown open the floodgates on a tidal wave of kids' programs that parents grew up with. Are they worth revisiting with your youngsters, though? That's a big question. Mark took a look at three classic teen series that you could relive with your kids and expect to get some interesting conversations out of as well.
Tim is going to be very cross when he finds out.
Oh, I'm cross.
At all.
Look at this, Kew Gardens redevelopment scheme. It's rape, sacrilege. I'm going to write to the Queen.
Oh, you're for it now, you are.
What's her address, do you know? Queens, Grayson, LaRue, Park Rangers.
Regina, here we are.
Oh, yes, of course, Buckingham Palace. Take a letter, would you, Graham? Dear Liz. No. Elizabeth. No, Ma'am. Mrs. Ma'am. No, Oh, Queen. I wish to complain about the wicked plans of Mr. Harry Highrise and his evil so-called architect, Mr. Graham Garden. Mr. Graham Garden. That's G-R-A-E-M-E. May I suggest that they both be locked up? No, that they should both have their bodies soundly smacked. No, that they should both be beheaded. Twice.
Oh, Mark, if that is any indication of where you're going with this segment, I love it already. What else have you got?
Oh, that's right. For those people who didn't recognise it, there's a clip from The Goodies.
I love The Goodies.
I know Bill Oddie, Tim Brooke Taylor, Graham Garden.
Oh, you know, hilarious.
Absurdist comedians who basically take on almost any radical situation that was going on in the
70s. Anything, anytime.
Anything, anytime. There you go. And look, the other two productions I think that I've dug out, by the way, The Goodies is available on QuickFlix.
So great. Well done, QuickFlix.
That's one streaming service that gets a thumbs up from us. Now, what's on Stan that's worth actually showing your kids from the past? Well, I chose Degrassi Junior High.
This is like my childhood coming back to like smack me in the face in a great way.
For those people who don't know, Degrassi is a Canadian drama franchise that used to follow the lives of a group of teenagers who lived on or near Degrassi Street in Toronto, Ontario. And the five main series are The Kids of Degrassi Street, Degrassi Junior High, Degrassi High, Degrassi The Next Generation.
They are starting to sound a little bit like Star Trek.
Yeah, and Degrassi Next Class.
Wow, and so that's standing. That's all of that's on Stan, or all just Degrassi Junior High?
Actually, at the moment, Degrassi Junior High is available.
But
on
give
Stan.
It time.
Yeah, and of course, we want to talk about that great sort of fantastic spin-off from the 80s. Not spin-off, sorry, the great TV show from the 80s, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. We talked about Will Smith earlier.
That's such a good show.
Will basically plays a sort of down-and-out an African-American boy who actually goes to stay in a snooty American suburb in Los Angeles and lives with a family and learns all sorts of fish-out-of-water type lessons along the way. So this is the three I thought we'd actually have a look at.
And that's on where can you see Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Oh, you can see that on Netflix.
Right. Now, okay. Why do these endure, do you think, apart from in my mind? Because as soon as you mention those titles, I start chuckling gleefully and nostalgically. I love those shows, but why do you think they endure?
Well, the goodies, for a start, is just a fantastic piece of absurdist comedy. Now, there's a lot of comedy that's just kind of more like slapstick for kids, but absurdism is a real art form, you know, probably most popularized by Monty Python, things like that.
But this is much more for kids, right? Or at least for family audiences.
Now, just so some of the best absurdist comedy you're going to see, but you don't have to understand the institutions they're poking fun at to really enjoy the comedy. So my boys have gone through all of the Goodies series. I have them on DVD, and so I've played them for them. A little bit of caution for the parents. I think this is great fun for the kids. They'll be laughing themselves silly. Just be careful, because it was the 70s. Okay, so 70s and early 80s, the Goodies produced, there was a more laissez-faire approach to TV, and so there's a lot of sort of sexual innuendo sometimes that comes through. Look, it's most of it would just go over kids' heads. It's none of it terribly dangerous, doesn't stretch beyond PG.
What about Degrassi Junior High and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? Why do they endure with us?
Well, Degrassi Junior High, its popularity and endurance was due to the fact that it didn't shy away from tackling difficult issues associated with adolescence.
Yeah, it did do that.
Yeah,
yes.
We've got a lot of things that seem to take care of kids, the idea, or seem to address kids in their adolescent years, like Home and Away and Neighbours. But in all honesty, they're melodrama.
And they're often very sanitised.
Yeah, well, actually, sometimes they're crazy. Like, I mean, it's not, Home and Away has sort of delved into the area of characters returning with new faces and murders and all this sort of stuff. It's hardly real life. Okay, but Degrassi Junior High dealt with stuff like drug use, child abuse, teenage pregnancy, racism, divorce, even homosexuality, which was quite early for that stage. And it was acclaimed for its sensitive and realistic portrayal of the challenges of teenage life. So in that sort of stuff, by the way, interestingly, the cast comprised mainly non-professional actors, which kind of added to the whole sense of realism.
And Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Well, early Will Smith. Basically, you should just go to see what Will Smith
he
looked like.
He was so funny and so cool and so charismatic.
He's just got, and his Dumbo ears, you know, said in the most loving way. Honestly, they stuck out more than. Basically, plus a classic country mouse, city mouse tale, or the clash of two worlds, which makes sense of every kid really actually feels at some stage or other when they walk into an environment and they just don't feel like they belong. It empowers the idea that you actually have wisdom coming from where you've come from and where you've grown up. And I think kids should take a bit of that on.
And to wrap up this look at old school shows that we could be showing to the kids right now, what lessons do you think Christian parents can still hope to learn through such dated programs? They are a bit dated, as you mentioned.
They're dated. You're going to see fashions that will make you wince. You're going to see hairstyles, you know, references to people long dead. Look, the truth is the Goodies actually has a great moral lesson behind it, because its whole approach is to deflate respected figureheads, you know, in society. Just the idea that you don't get too wowed by the fact that just because someone's a queen doesn't mean that they don't have all sorts of crazy things going on in their life, or just because someone's a prime minister, etc., etc. And I love that, because that plays right into Psalm 2. I don't know if you've had a read of Psalm 2 recently, but it's God,
not for a while, no.
Well, it's God looking at the nations and the people who are conspiring against him, and just because they happen to be kings and potentates and queens and stuff, God laughing at them and saying, listen, how are you going to do anything to destabilize my plans? You know, let me tell you what's going to happen. What I like about Degrassi Junior High, from a spiritual point of view, is it deals with life as it is, not as we wish. Okay, and that actually is a grain of truth towards the beginning of wisdom, the idea that we actually see the world the way God wants it to be. And finally, I think the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, well, it's God who raises up and God who casts down, and God chooses the foolish things of this world to actually shame the wise. At least that's what they say in Corinthians. And I've got to say that we don't have to worry about not being the richest, the strongest, the best looking, if you can have the smarts and ears of Will Smith.
Great point to end on, Mark. The Goodie is available through QuickFlix. It's rated PG for low-level violence, sexual references, and nudity. Degrassi Junior High is on Stan and also rated PG for adolescent themes, drug references, and sexual references. And The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on Netflix is rated, wait for it, PG for mild violence and mild themes. Go stream, enjoy. You are most welcome.
A little before we did this review, I posed a true or false to Ben about Will Smith and his level of control that he exercised over a doll created for the Men in Black series, one particularly showing him as Agent J. Now, I said to you, was it true that he actually went to Hong Kong to basically control the image of this and insisted on certain add-on parts that you would normally find at least?
Yes, true, true, all the way true.
It's absolutely true.
Yes.
Okay, he did go all the way to Hong Kong. The museum-like representation of Agent J features an authentic likeness with individually hand-painted head sculpted with a serious facial expression. The newly developed body that came out had 40 points of articulation, so you could get that exact Will Smith style, and a soft plastic PV skin just in case you wanted to take your shirt off. Okay, and the product came with exciting accessories, a dog in a black suit, you know, Agent Frank, if you follow the series,
mm-mm,
and four pairs of interchangeable hands. Just in case, what did you want Will to be doing with his hands at that point? Well, you snap them off and just put on the right pair of hands for the expression.
Wow. And that's just the start of our show. Still to come on this edition of
more
The Big
Ego
Picture.
More ego run amok.
We're going to get a little bit more patriotic, Mark. We're going to play an Australian national anthem and then talk about the controversial new Australian comedy about the Cronulla riots. Welcome back to The Big Picture. We're at the soundtrack section of our show, Mark. And this song doesn't need any introduction, so there won't be an introduction. Instead...
In a freighter combi, on a hippie trailhead full of zombies, I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under, where women go and men wonder? Can't you hear the thunder? Buying bread from a man in Brussels. He was 6'4" and full of muscle. I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land down under, where we don't know and mention her. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover. Better take cover. Speak up. Land down.
course, Mark, that is Men at Work's Down Under. It was first released in 1980 as a B-side. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. They didn't even think it was worthy of an A-side release.
No, but somehow it must have got popular real quick. Then it was re-released a few years ago.
Back in the day, there used to be these things called records that had an A-side, which was the dominant track being released, and a B-side, which is whatever they could scratch together to put on the other side and not waste the vinyl.
Thanks, Gramps. Thanks for explaining. And then it was re-released as a single in 1981, and then it went to the top of the charts in all kinds of countries, not just Australia. Not just New Zealand, but USA and UK in 1983 topped the charts. For a song that's become something of an Australian national anthem, I find it strange that one of the co-writers and the singer of the song, Colin Hay, described the song as being about the loss of spirit in this country, and it's really about the plundering of our country by greedy people. It's ultimately about celebrating this country, but not in a nationalistic way and not in a flag-waving sense. It's more than that. And yet it's become this kind of patriotic flag-waving anthem for this country. I think most people would know that it got into a bit of legal strife in the past couple of years about that tune in the background of from the Australian kind of folk song or kids song of Kookaburra. And that eventually in court it was decided, yes, you did rip that song off and you need to pay some royalties for that tune. And why we've got it in the show? Well, we're about to talk about a new Australian film called Down Under. This song doesn't actually feature in it, which is surprising. And the film...
Because of more legal battles.
I would say more legal battles. And maybe that's the reason why it hasn't actually turned up in as many TV shows or as movies as you would have thought. When I went and had a search for this week, I expected just to see it in abundance. Not really. The main movies that I could find that this was in, Kangaroo Jack, awful. Crocodile Dundee in LA, awful. And so that's it. So maybe that's why they just don't give the rights out anymore to Down Under, because it turns up in bad movies.
I think there's an opportunity there, people. Like, someone should go write a film specifically based around this song just so they can use it. There you go. Well, now moving on to Now Showing for this week. And yes, we're talking about Down Under. It's Christmas Day 2005, the annual celebration of Jesus' birth and peace to all humanity, turned into a despicable riot of racism when Caucasian Australians and Lebanese Australians violently clashed. Down Under is a new movie set in the immediate aftermath of those riots on the suburban Sydney beach of Cronulla. And Down Under is a comedy. What about the Cronulla riots, right? Talk about controversial and potentially divisive. So, is it right or even possible for us to laugh at prejudice and hate?
We got to go out and patrol the streets.
That's the smartest thing I've heard anyone say all day.
Jeez, Dad, I don't think we're going to go shoot anybody.
Don't forget this. Your granddad's lucky grenade.
Bang! Ah!
Ah! These dogs are treating us like we're second-class citizens. I'm sick and I'm tired of them feeling like they've got more of a right to be here than us.
Why are they so angry in the world? Ah!
They reckon the beach belongs to us.
It's a beach. It belongs to everyone.
Mate, how do you make a comedy out of the Cronulla riots?
You do it by making a really dark comedy, Mark. This is from a writer-director, Abe Forsyth, who's been an Australian actor for a while. And he's actually done it, I think. So this film is funny at times. I should say straight off the bat, when I mentioned dark comedy, it definitely is, and as you could expect, when it is in the immediate aftermath, it's the day after the Cronulla riots, and it's focusing on two carloads of hotheads on both sides of the equation. So you get some Lebanese blokes, and you get some Caucasian Australians in the other car. We kind of follow them as they're basically gravitating around the Cronulla beach where that riot happened in 2005, and then really just looking to go and get some revenge. So somehow Abe Forsyth has been able to turn it into a comedy, but it is that kind of, and here's the warning, offensive comedy. And he's done it deliberately. It's a deliberately provocative move. By his own description, he thought, well, what better way can I sort of say something about racism in Australia? I'll turn it into a comedy. I'll make us try to laugh at ourselves and these people who are racist and prejudiced and hateful. But he's done it in a way that, wow, like everything from swearing to sexual innuendo to some really quite shocking blasts of violence come through this film. It's a movie not for everyone. It's deliberately controversial and provocative. But given the subject matter it's about, I can sort of see why. So, yeah, you can make a comedy out of the Cronulla riots, it turns out, in the form of Down Under.
So it's basically laughing at the stupidity of racists.
Yeah, yeah. Abe Forsyth reckons there's a lot of casual racism in Australia. I wouldn't disagree with that. And he thinks it stems from ignorance. I wouldn't disagree with that either. And so he's tried to sort of put this mirror back up to Australian society. A lot of Down Under is deliberately broad, so you get that really ochre Australian comedy. So stuff like, I don't think we've really seen it much since, like The Castle is the first example I can think of that comes to my mind. These are only in the same camp by virtue of the way they exaggerate some Australianness about us that we try to laugh at ourselves. So Down Under does that sometimes too much. So he's really, particularly on the Caucasian side, the white, quote unquote, white guys, they're so ugly in their just stupidity and their hatred of Lebanese Australians that you do laugh at them, but also sometimes it just becomes off a little mocking. It just becomes mocking and almost too much of a stereotype or just a brushstroke across society. But saying that, go back to the bit where it's set in the aftermath of the Cronulla riots. And unfortunately, what that exposed about Australians is shocking and terrible and deplorable and actually quite stupid and disgusting. And I think all of that shows up in Down Under. And interestingly, for a comedy, Mark, there's a lot of tension and hostility flowing through this, as you'd expect for the setting. But it's quite a remarkable thing, I think, that Abe Forsyth's done. I'm not saying Down Under is an amazing piece of work, but I think he's actually managed to do what he set out to do and inject this level of hostility and tension through it that most comedies don't really have.
Does it have a neat solution?
Yeah, it does. And the clip that we played just at the start kind of goes to that. The right at the end of the clip we played, one of the characters in the film, Evan, who is a young actor who's got Down syndrome. We've talked on the show in previous times about the fact that really actors who are differently abled don't usually turn up on screen playing characters who are differently abled. Well, here's a guy who is playing a guy called Chris Bunton, who's playing Evan in this film. And something that he says sounds naive, sounds simple, sounds like just too easy a solution, which is basically, why can't we all get along? Cronulla Beach is a beach. It's for everyone. Why doesn't everyone share it? Why do we pick each other apart on the color of our skin, et cetera, et cetera?
Is that a bit naive?
Well, yes and no. Like, when you say things like that, it does sound naive. It does sound like, and that this happened, 11 years ago? Look where we are today. I don't know if we'd say that Australia has changed as much as we would like it to. So yeah, it can sound naive. But as a Christian bloke watching this film, which I was definitely confronted by, and I'm not advocating people race out to see it because you will be shocked by the levels of particularly language and violence and the sexual references in this film, right? But as a Christian viewer, I was struck by the simplicity of what this Evan character is saying to us, and I think that's effectively the moral of the story, is I wish this could all be the way the world is. As a Christian, I reflect on often how there's so much about Christianity that's like that, that just sounds too good to be true or too easy to believe, or it does sound to the point of naivety, that you're just saying something that just sounds ludicrously easy and ideal. How could that be possible? What Jesus offers us in life is possible and real. What's shown up on Down Under is that, yeah, if we strive to be the people that often we claim we want to be, equal, tolerant, fair, we could be the country we want to be. Down Under demonstrates, sadly, we're not. So I think, yes, the solution presented in here does sound naive, but that doesn't mean it's not the solution. And I'm really kind of happy that a movie like Down Under's come out, even though it is going to shock and appall many people.
Okay, well, Down Under is certainly not an Australian movie for everyone, as Ben said. It opens this Thursday, August 11, at cinemas across the Great Southern Land. It stars Lincoln Yunes, Alexander England, Rael Roman. Do I say that right? Rael Roman?
I hope so. That's better than my pronunciation.
And Chris Bunton. It hasn't been officially rated, but we'll probably get an MA 15+ for swearing, violence, sexual content. So beware. And on next week's show, actually, Ben will be interviewing Abe Forsyth, the writer-director of Down Under, for his first-hand account of why he tackled such a controversial real-life event.
Yeah. Mark, we are all over the Facebooks, and when we're on Facebook and we're sharing the reviews that we do and articles we do, please engage with us, like our stuff, share it, all that kind of thing. But we've got something even better this week for you. If you don't like the sound of that, we've got free stuff
free
to give
stuff.
Away. Last week, this week, even next week, we're doing this, aren't we? We're giving away tickets to the release of the new film Ben-Hur, the remake of that epic ancient extravaganza Ben-Hur. It's coming to cinemas. We've got 10 free tickets. Mark, how do people win?
I was talking about controversial real-life event. This isn't. Okay, but what we'd like you to do is go on the Facebook page, and if you simply write down, I love togas, and I'm not afraid to say it. We'll send you a double pass. How simple is that? Well, actually, we've only got 10, so I'd be quick. You toga lovers, get on quickly to the Facebooks and have a look at the Big Pictures page. I love togas, and I'm not afraid to say it. And coming up on the show yet, we have something of a PR fiasco. We have Absolutely Fabulous coming along, the PR film comedy with Jennifer Saunders, and a real-life Christian in PR. Is there such a thing?
Welcome back to The Big Picture. In a few moments, we're going to take a look at Absolutely Fabulous, a classic long-running British comedy that's finally made the jump from the small to the big screen. And it made us think about the tricky world of public relations, didn't it, Mark? Or PR? PR? Is that
PR.
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 PR. Is that? I didn't watch Absolutely Fabulous, but that's what Absolutely Fabulous fans would call PR. Is it a world where only the egotistical flourish? And a career where you can only prosper if you are prepared to pass off mutton as lamb. In short, could a Christian dare to be PR? PR?
In PR.
In PR. Well, this week, we sent Mark off to chat with Monique Fennick, a Christian who has indeed made a clear conscience living out of putting the best face on things.
Well, I'm sitting here with Monique Fennick, who is a PR, or do we say PR expert? And Monique is basically going to give us a bit of an insight as to what it's like to work in the PR industry. Monique, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problems, Mark.
Now, let me begin by saying our picture of PR is going to be shaped somewhat by the release of the film Absolutely Fabulous. Edwina spends her days going from getting facial treatments, dropping by to do a tad of shopping. Patsy is probably going from one liquor land to another. Is this a good picture of PR? Is this what PR is like?
It's certainly an entertaining picture. I can't wait to see the film, and we all love Patsy and Edwina, so I think we're drawn to their characters simply because it's so colourful. But to answer your question, certainly not.
What's your day-to-day like?
Well, it involves a lot of planning and a lot of client liaison. So we're really all about trying to please the client at the end of the day. So it's all about good listening, good planning, and despite having the best laid plans, things just don't go the way that you plan at the start of the day. So it can just turn into a whole range of different priorities that you didn't expect. So it's about thinking on your feet and at the end of the day getting a good result.
What then is the big goal for PR? What in the end are you hoping to do for your client?
Well, it's interesting because the market's really, really changed. It used to be all about big splashes across the newspapers, and it's simply not about that anymore. Our clients are content creators within their own rights now. So, if you like, it's more about citizen journalism now. So what our clients really want is that their brand can be conveyed in the way that they've shaped it. So in whatever medium we choose, whether it be social media or if we are trying to get that splash across the newspaper, what we're trying to do is help that client have its brand realised amongst its target audience.
Now, there are a lot of things you can do, especially when you're trying to tell a story for someone or trying to build a story for someone. You're a Christian. What are some of the danger areas you have to be aware of?
I think the biggest thing that affects me as a Christian is just managing stress in the workplace, because it is a very stressful workplace for anyone listening who works in PR or even consulting. It's a very stressful workplace, and you can have all those plans, as I said at the start, in place, but it could all go pear-shaped. So I think for me, being a Christian, it's all about managing that stress and trying to help the people around you to do the very best that they can and work within that small micro environment rather than the macro environment that you know PR tends to lend itself to. It's definitely hard, but having that Christian perspective, it is all about thinking about the bigger picture in this scenario and trying to see things as you know God would want me to see it as well.
So it's not always about just getting the result too. I mean, dishonesty itself can be a bit of a problem, a temptation, or a shortcut. Is there a percentage in PR in being honest?
You know, it's completely flipped. You know, you would not believe how much PR has changed over the past few years. Social media it has been such a good benchmark for everyone because there's nowhere to hide anymore. brands have a real need to show integrity now. So that's a good thing for PR, because it means that brands have to be honest. Brands have to be, you know, they have to respond in a way that people believe them. Otherwise, they'll just get hounded, either via social media or by the media. So I don't think it's about that anymore. I think it's more about integrity. It's about showing honesty. And, you know, if you slip up, show the media and the social media channels that you have done so. I mean, it's a different world out there now.
After three scintillating series in the early 1980s, Mark, Absolutely Fabulous became something of a British comedy classic on the small screen. The only mystery is why it's taken so long for it to reach the big screen. The TV series, it wound up in 1995, though its creator, comedian Jennifer Saunders, has been unveiling a special every couple of years or so, right up to 2012. The misadventures of Edwina Moon, a vapid, style-crazed PR merchant, have given TV fans guffaws and moments of dumbstruck horror for decades. Can its comic cast do the same for the cinema set, Sweetie Darling? Is that what they say in the show? Sweetie Darling?
They do Sweetie Darling. Oh. Sweetie Darling.
And what's more, is there a warning about the stupidity of self-worship underneath all of that Dolce & Gabbana and La Croix?
I think I am now officially fatter sideways than I am front on.
No, you don't need those. I am your mirror.
How do I look?
Fabulous.
Thank you. Hi, darling. No, I'm working for Nobu this week.
You don't know this, and I don't know this, but Kate Moss is changing her PR.
You've got to get her.
No.
Kate Moss, darling.
I'm here on the red carpet at London's biggest fashion event of the year.
What is Absolutely Fabulous? Well, it's the Jennifer Saunders Dawn French-inspired series that follows the misadventures of Edwina, played by Saunders, a vacuous PR mogul who's traded who's traded on glitz and glamour and drugs and a great deal of champers from the psychedelic 60s right to the present. And her best friend and partner in crime is Patsy. Patsy's played by Joanna Lumley. And she's the editor of a fashion rag who's been smoking and sleeping her way through those same decades. They are scandalous, they are vapid, they are ridiculous, and an absolute terror to anybody who knows them, and now they're on the big screen. And this particular outing, this particular storyline, Eddie hears that Kate Moss, the supermodel, is changing her agent and is desperate to land her as her client. Only her klutzy carrying on that you normally see in the television series results in her killing Kate Moss. Well, actually not killing. There's a bit of a mystery there. She's charged with
a
murder.
A mystery sounds like you just gave away.
No. Trust me. There's heaps in it. And then they go on the run in high heels, which in itself is pretty funny. Ridiculousness ensues. It's got a stint in France. It's got a lot of La Croix.
Mate, I think you're part of the reason that Absolutely Fabulous, the movie, has made it to screens. You're a big fan of the original TV series. So did you enjoy this outing, even though it's like a little bit head-scratching about why have they returned right now?
Yeah, I feel like this is one where I should say it's going to split audiences right down the middle. Because if you love Absolutely Fabulous, the TV series, well, you're going to see the same vapid fashion world that you've come to laugh at all this time. You're going to see all the favourite characters. They're going to be saying all the same lines. In fact, they're going to be doing all the same things. The plot line is stirringly familiar. Look, okay, it's one for insiders. And so that's the thing. So I sat there and there were moments I went, oh, chortled through it and laughed and wished my wife was there because she loves it too and it would have been great. And then I'm sure that half the cinema was just bemused.
But it wasn't quite like seeing old friends come back on screen, that kind of thing. You know, I mean, like, what sort of feeling did it engender from you? It just sounds a little bit like boredom.
Yeah, well, sadly, look, it was kind of not so much like old friends, so much as retired friends.
Friends that you just wish would leave.
Friends who've gone to a retirement village and you just dropped in to see them. In some respects, all the characters are just older and overweight. And, you know, I mean, I feel like it's not as good as it could have been because it's just not fresh. They didn't think about taking it further.
Which I would have thought would be the thing. We were talking about this on last week's show when we talked about Star Trek Beyond and Jason Bourne. And what if you're going to bring these things back, Ghostbusters, you'd surely have this like reason.
Do something
why,
new.
Why? There's got to be a big why. And you'd think as an audience member you would find it. It sounds like you haven't found it in Absolutely Fabulous. But what about, is the film kind of smart, knowing enough to laugh at itself?
Yeah, actually, this is one of the good things about Absolutely Fabulous as a franchise. Edwina basically spouts this same self-justifying, self-forgiving lines that have always got her into trouble. And the audience know that you can't live life like this. You know, she says, I've messed up. I know that, darling, but that's what's going to happen with anyone who really loves life. And that sort of self-excusing...
Sounds like a T-shirt.
Yeah, that sort of self-excusing claptrap that could only appear on a T-shirt. The viewers pick up that that's just a stupid way to live. And yet, practically speaking, we often do it. You know, I've just tried to do my best. I've lived life as I can. And you just go, really? And this is how that philosophy takes you. So it doesn't know enough to laugh at itself.
Mate, so it's got high fashion, self-indulgence and soaring egos. So I presume in amongst all that, there's no real room for God. I don't remember the original series that well. I have no idea whether God showed up or not in Absolutely Fabulous, apart from maybe that, I don't know how it might play out. Is it even in the movie?
No, God doesn't turn up in a way that we would respect. But I'll tell you what does turn up, and this is actually really good. An idol turns up, okay? Here's the interesting thing. You've got Edwina is a Western Buddhist, okay? And I use this term...
like loosely or...
Yeah, almost derisively.
Right, okay. Having a go at it.
Yeah, the reason why is because Western Buddhism is in itself, philosophically, almost nothing like Buddhism. Okay, Western Buddhism is almost very much like about making yourself feel very good about your life choices and feeling peaceful and happy with the world, which follows none of the Buddhist philosophy. Okay, so Edwina says how she's besieged by journalists. She locks herself in a toilet and that's where she happens to keep her Buddha, her little statue of Buddha.
Oh, this is the idol you're talking
about. Yeah, her idol. And she drags it down and she shakes it in her hands and she says, how many alms have I given you? How much money? And where's my enlightenment? You know, and really what you realize about her style of religion is it's really just been about worshipping herself to try and get something. And
to get what she wants.
Yeah, of course, if you worship yourself, you're not really going to get much of an answer in a crisis. You know, you're only going to have what you've got to offer. And I thought, for one thing at least, Absolutely Fabulous did particularly absolutely fabulously, was to show just how vapid this whole idea of Western Buddhism is.
Mate, well, on that note, it was just slightly positive, even though you weren't really giving it a ringing endorsement. Absolutely Fabulous is rated M for coarse language, drug use, and sexual references, which is quite a lot.
In fact. Now, just beware, it's almost like the whole sort of lewd comment lasciviousness. It's not like there's sexual images you've got to worry about, but just like the references.
And it's been striving to be absolutely fabulous at the cinemas since last Thursday, August 4. It does star Jennifer Saunders, Joanna Lumley, and guest appearances from about every famous British tabloid sensation you could poke a lipstick at.
And would probably want to. Well, coming up on the show yet, we've got some fabulous things along the way. We've got The Vault, where we finally make Ben take a little bit of cinematic education and learn why he should be watching Jerry Maguire. We also have a top five to hang around for and another chance at our Ben-Hur ticket giveaway. Welcome back. I learn new stuff every week. For example, when Ben and I and our producer were talking about Absolutely Fabulous and other movies about Pia, we mentioned Jerry Maguire. Of course, as you do. Famous, popular film starring Tom Cruise as a PR guy. For sports stars. He's really kind of an agent. But Ben's response was, what? I mean, really? Oh, Jerry Maguire.
Not what? I just said I haven't seen. I know what the movie is.
Oh, Jerry Maguire?
Oh, come on, man. Don't paint me into that corner. I haven't seen it. That's what I said.
And he calls himself a movie reviewer. Okay, so for the Vault segment this week, we basically insisted that we would actually get our resident American, Russ Matthews, who has a background in sales, actually, to convince Ben in less than 3 minutes to finally watch Jerry Maguire.
All right, Russ, your time starts now.
All right, now, Ben, I'm pretty confident that I'd be able to convince you that this is a movie for you to see, especially, but it's a movie that's been around for about 20 years, so what I want to do is just give you the first few seconds to tell me what you know of this film.
You want to give me some of your precious seconds because you're that confident?
Seconds. Just a few seconds.
Really? Okay, okay. What I know about Jerry Maguire, Tom Cruise is in it as Jerry Maguire. He's a sports agent or something. He has some sort of crisis, and then he has to land a big client, which is Cuba Gooding Jr. Somehow Renee Zellweger's in it as the love interest. She's got a son, and then Jerry Maguire's redemption story comes out of that. How'd I go?
Close, but not quite. You know, but, but hey, well, I'll try to help you out with this as far as looking at why this should be a film that you should see.
Yeah, clearly I don't know much about it.
Especially, well, what's interesting too is I'd actually put the label on it. This is one of the best dating movies. It's actually ranked as one of the best dating movies. But actually, I think it will be...
As in a movie for the ladies and the blokes.
Ladies and the blokes, but also a great film for you and your wife to be able to sit down on the lounge and enjoy together.
And Russ, by my calculations, you've only got about 2 minutes to go.
Let's go. Okay, so what I'm going to do is break it down into categories. Just so you know, it is... This is kind of more of an adult film in regards to some of the content and what you're looking at as far as some of the language and such that's a part of it.
Rated MA 15 plus, right?
And then there's a reason behind that. So definitely want to make sure that warning's put there at the beginning. One of the main reasons why you should see this film, The Jerry Maguire, is that it's philosophical. And philosophical mainly because it starts off at the beginning. He is going through this tension of kind of trying to figure out. He's this very successful sport agent, but all of a sudden he's going, am I doing the right thing?
You got about 90 seconds to go.
And the things we think and do not say is his manifesto that he actually writes. Cameron Crowe wrote it, even though they never read it in the movie, he actually wrote it.
I'm interested in manifestos.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I went through and read it myself. Next. It's delightful.
In the sense,
delightful.
I like delightful movies.
Delightful movies. And it's mainly because he has this cute kid named Jonathan.
60 seconds, Nicky, my man.
Nicky's in it, and he's fantastic. He actually became one of the script writers, and he gave us the line, did you know that the human brain weighs 8 pounds? He just said it on the set. Cameron Crowe threw it into the...
As in, the young boy in the movie wrote some of the dialogue? I'm more intrigued than I was 2 minutes and 15 seconds ago. Right,
there you go. There's a physiological, as far as it's a sport film. And so for a lot of blokes out there, you're going to love the sports. Even though I know it's American football, it still has some great cameos. It's still so much fun to watch and kind of see who actually makes it into the film.
Okay, 30 seconds.
The vernacular is actually, it's great writing. Cameron Crowe actually won for the Academy Award not too long, a few years before, for Almost Famous, but has two of the top 100 movie quotes of all time. Show me the money, and you had me at hello.
I know those lines. I reckon you've got about 10 seconds to go, Russ. What's your big final punchline to convince me?
It is actually the last line of the film. It's actually from Dickie Fox. He says this at the very end. He says this, Ben, I love my wife, I love my life, and I wish you the same kind of success. So I wish the same thing for you and your love life by seeing Jerry Maguire.
Russ, I think you blasted through about 10 seconds over your time. However, 3 minutes and 10 seconds earlier, I was less interested in seeing Jerry Maguire than I am now. So I think your mission somewhat accomplished. You've almost convinced me to watch Jerry Maguire.
Ha!
Okay, so I'm slightly more convinced. I'm a long way more convinced than I was 3 minutes before I started speaking with Russ.
And I will be delivering your copy around later.
And because Russ has brainwashed me so much, I need to at this point, Mark, say, go to insights.uca.org.au and check out more of Russ's reviews. As we talk about here on the show, often Insights website and magazine are big supporters of our show. Russ is a regular reviewer with them. We have a lot of time for his reviews. He's reviewed all the latest stuff, everything from Suicide Squad to Star Trek Beyond and beyond. Check out his reviews, insights.uca.org.au.
But not before you go to the Eternity website. In fact, actually, I'd like to say, have a Google of Eternity newspaper and you'll find that they've got their new website coming out. You've got an opportunity to look at the old and the new, so to speak, side by side. Check out the Bible Society at biblesociety.org.au, and you'll also find that in their news section all of the great stuff from Eternity. Now, Eternity, another big supporter of the show, and Ben's article on Ben-Hur.
Bigger than Ben-Hur.
Will be achieving celebritydom
or something.
There's a word in the August edition and also on the website. And that gives us an excuse to mention a ticket giveaway. You might have heard a little early in the show. Maybe you heard last week. You'll certainly hear next week. Ben-Hur is coming. Mm-hmm. Contact the Big Picture through our Facebook page.
At the Big Picture Show.
And we will give you a double pass. We should have 10 to give away. And we're going to give the 10 double passes to Ben-Hur to the first 10 people who write, I love Togas. And I'm not afraid to say it.
What's that statement again, Mark?
I love togas, and I'm not afraid to say it, or write it in this case.
End of the show, Mark. Top five time, and because
highlight,
we were
peak of the show.
One of the many highlights, Mark. We're just a show of peaks. It just doesn't stop peaking.
Doesn't that make us a plateau of the show?
I prefer to look at it as a systematic chain of peaks. And here we are at another one.
You failed geography.
We were talking
a mountain range of peaks.
We were talking earlier, Mark, about your love for Absolutely Fabulous, a British TV comedy series that's been made into a movie that you weren't much of a fan of.
Well, I go back and watch the series.
But we thought, let's do a top five list then of top British TV comedies that you definitely should go back and dig up.
Yes.
Five.
1988 till the present, Red Dwarf.
Oh, yes.
Red Dwarf is a Lister. Cracker. Yeah. How good is this show? It's actually had 10 seasons, and apparently, according to IMDb, there are seasons in production for this year and next year, which are bringing up to season 12. And but across since 1988 until now, they've staggered those 10 seasons out. You're right to mention Dave Lister, who's played by Craig Charles, and Arnold Rimmer is played by Chris Barry. Arnold Rimmer is a hologram on a spaceship in the future that was originally in the show, in the pilot episode. It's the near future, and they're on this like mining ship in space, and then an incident happens to do with radiation. The only surviving human, who is Lister, Craig Charles's character, gets put into stasis, and then 3 million years later is awoken, because that's when the radiation is depleted, which means that he's the only guy on the ship, and he's living with this hologram that he hates, and there's a life-size cat, and there's a robot called Crichton who's really funny. The show is fantastic. I think
not the future he expected, actually.
Not the future he expected, or the one that we did. I'm not much of a science fiction guy. That's more your department, Mark, but I love the show for its ability to do everything from slapstick to a really engaging banter humor, as well as sophisticated science fiction concepts that wrap themselves up very neatly into a sitcom situation.
Yeah, it is brilliant TV. If you haven't seen Red Dwarf, you really should. What do you got for us?
Four.
Still more gold.
Still more gold. Have you seen Gavin and Stacey?
No, I haven't.
Mate, that show is super. My wife Amy was banging on about this show for the last couple of years. She saw it in London a number of years ago. It was released between 2008 and 2010. The biggest thing going for it now is that James Corden, do you know who James Corden is?
No, okay. Is he a relative of Jerry Maguire?
He is not, but you should know, because James Corden has become one of the biggest celebrity TV presenters in the States. He's a British guy. In the past couple of years, he has erupted online, particularly with his carpool karaoke. If you Google carpool karaoke James Corden, Corden, you will see him driving around Los Angeles with people like Chris Martin from Coldplay or Adele or Michelle Obama in his car singing songs. That's how big James Corden has got. He wrote and stars in Gavin and Stacey. He's not the Gavin of the title. That's a guy called Matthew Horne. Joanna Page is Stacey. This show is basically about a collision of two worlds in England. You get Welsh people and people from Essex, which is an area in England. What I love about the show is that it's a great look at people being people. I think British do very well, even underratedly so. Is that a word? Underratedly so.
It is now.
They do quite well at shows about relationships in a way that, say, a show like Friends bored me senseless. There's been British shows like, I don't know if you've ever seen Coupling or Men Behaving Badly, I think present people in a much more quote-unquote true light. I think Gavin and Stacey do that in a way that's really, really like everyday stuff. It's just basically a couple getting together, eventually getting married. Are they going to have kids and their family that circles them around them? James Corden is in this. He's hilarious. So is the rest of the cast. It's on Presto now. What you should do is thrash it.
Three.
In a good way.
In a good way. Now for something completely different. Yes, Minister, and yes, Prime Minister.
Oh, I thought that was a link to Monty Python.
No.
Monty Python's Flying Circus.
There may or may not be a link to Monty Python throughout the rest of the list. We're at number three on the British TV comedy series that you should go and dig up. Yes, Minister started in 1980, had a couple of seasons. Yes, Prime Minister came along about 6 years later. This is before TV shows like The Thick of It. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Which is a really funny show, but here's the word of warning. There's so much swearing on that show, it's going to turn a lot of people off.
Don't watch it if you think that Doctor Who is going to be great, because he's in it.
Yeah, the actor who, what's his name, Peter Capaldi, who's one of the recent doctors.
Don't let the kids watch it, because, look, Capaldi's in it. He's Doctor Who, isn't he?
No, that's the thick of it. So that's like the kind of modern retelling almost of Yes, Minister, which is a similar kind of show to Utopia as well, that Australian comedy that came out in the last couple of years.
The Hollow Men,
that's right. So set in the corridors of power. As the title would suggest, in the first season, the first few seasons is about a minister, and then this minister later becomes prime minister. What the show is most memorable for, though, are the exchanges between Sir Humphrey Appleby, played by Nigel Hawthorne, who won, by my calculations, about 1.2 million BAFTA awards for his performance as Sir Humphrey Appleby, who's this guy who's like pulling the strings, the puppet master behind all the ministers.
Or trying to be.
So he's as clever as he thinks he is, but he's not usually as successful, whereas the minister, James Hacker, Paul Eddington, isn't as clever as he thinks he is. And then there's this other great guy called Bernard, who's like the assistant to the minister and the prime minister, who just plays more of the straight bat going right through the middle. But again, one of the great things about British comedy, like we mentioned with Red Dwarf, is they can get some remarkably sophisticated ideas and concepts and storylines going on in a sitcom way. It's a very wordy show, but we went back and watched it a couple of weeks ago and it still holds up, even though it's from almost like 30 years ago.
If you want clever writing, if you want one-liners that will leave you laughing for days, yes,
yeah,
Minister,
about the
absolutely.
Bureaucracy, like the satire of government and infrastructure and bureaucracy, it's really difficult to go past Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister. Two. Oh, Mark, you might have expected me to come out with this at number one. Instead, it's at number two, Fawlty Towers.
Oh, wow, I can't wait. Oh, it's Fawlty Towers. It's fantastic.
Here's your Monty Python link, and I'll just ruin the suspense for anyone who thinks Monty Python's going to show up at number one. It's not. Not on my personal list. I'm not a huge...
Not on my watch.
I'm not a huge fan of Monty Python. I get that you're meant to be. You mentioned absurdist comedy at the start of the show with the goodies. For me, Monty Python often just feels like I'm meant to find it funny, even though I don't quite get it, but I'm meant to tell my friends that I do, because otherwise I'm going to look uncool. Fawlty
you
Towers,
are uncool.
Fawlty Towers, on the other hand, I'm just going to go past that what you just said. Fawlty Towers, on the other hand, from John Cleese, one of the Monty Python members, is more like Mr. Bean meeting Monty Python, meeting acerbic comedy, meeting class warfare and struggles, all in a seaside rundown hotel that's managed by Basil Fawlty, played by John Cleese. If you haven't seen Fawlty Towers, like, people would have definitely heard of this show, but if you haven't watched it, go back for sitcom gold. It's a great example of a show that never pushed its ideas too far. So it only had two seasons and each season had six episodes, so 12 episodes in total. The influence that Fawlty Towers has had on TV comedy over that time from just 12 episodes is striking.
Yeah, Netflix actually has got that on at the moment. We showed it to the boys recently and has now become the favourite line in our house is talking to Manuel. Yeah, and Basil says, Manuel, this is Mrs. Fawlty. This, Mr. Fawlty, this smack in the head.
Wow.
Gets quoted a lot.
I don't know what's going on at the Happy
household.
From our
boys. From our boys.
But I do know what's coming next. One. This is a big personal choice. I'll put out that word of warning like I did with the thick of it a little bit earlier on. This isn't for everybody. It's going to offend some. The Office from 2001 to 2003, I think, is an amazing piece of television work. Best known for Ricky Gervais, who created it and plays David Brent in this show. As it says in the title, it is about an office. It is about the everyday mundane, the banality of working in office.
The soul-destroying.
The soul-destroying. Talk about everything from the bureaucracy to the relationship issues that go on in that show. As difficult as David Brent, as offensive, as obnoxious as that character is, the one that Ricky Gervais plays, he's still somehow remarkably sympathetic sometimes, or you can feel sympathy towards him, let alone all the characters that are converging around him. So I picked The Office at number one. I think it's almost having as much influence over television comedy as what Fawlty Towers it has. Highly memorable in my book. So number one, The Office, between 2001 and 2003, it only, also like Fawlty Towers, had 12 episodes. Go and check them out.
Yeah, the bosses are panicking. They're going, oh, cut back, lose staff, you know. That's the way forward. That'll save us money, will it? Yeah? Who's to say that, you know, hiring staff won't save money in the long run? You know, does a struggling salesman start turning up on a bicycle? Well, he turns up in a newer car. Perception, yeah? They've got to trust me. I'm taking these guys into battle, yeah? And I'm doing my own stapling, yeah? A sergeant major spends all his time training his men to be killers. He doesn't polish his own boots. He probably does polish his own boots, but, you know, it doesn't mean I have to do my own filing.
Mark, a great show about delusions of grandeur. The American Office with Steve Carell, I thought, was a worthy taking of that to other shores, but the original Office is amazing viewing.
Yeah, it is incredible. Look, caps off, man. That's a top list.
Yeah.
A top.
All right, that was this show. What on earth will we do next week to top that off?
Well, we've got a Japanese-inspired kids' fantasy, Kubo and the Two Strings. Really looking forward to it.
Also going
to
talk about Suicide Squad, which, yeah, I reckon looks like the Avengers on crazy pills.
And we've talked a little bit about Ben-Hur. Ben-Hur is on the way. Will the Ben-Hur remake be bigger than Ben-Hur?
And next week, I won't be Ben-Hur. Won't even be bigger than Ben-Hur. I'll just be Ben McKechnie.
And I'll be Mark Hadley. See you then.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.